Okay.
Ready.
As we walk this journey called life, we seek to find those things that bring joy to our existence. We want to embrace love, desire, and passion through healthy human connections. We want and need to discover meaning to the steps we take daily, the challenges of breaking barriers stir up our spirit as we prove our individual importance. The value of life is precious as we assist others to discover their way. The legacy of our being is found in the donations we make in those outside of ourselves. Success in this journey takes focus and commitment to winning. The victory is in not allowing fractured beliefs of the masses to impact the rules we have made work for ourselves. This is James T. Deshay, the host of Thoughts, Love, and Reflection. We come to you 7 days a week, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m., Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and Sunday at 8:30 Eastern Time. We have a platform for your voice to be heard loud and clear and unfiltered. It is time that we speak for ourselves, so that others completely understand the direction we want our country to go in. No longer can we sit on the sidelines and allow others to select our direction. It is time for people of color to use the internet to make sure their voices are heard beyond a couple of streets. Our thoughts and needs and desires need to be heard around the world. And Thoughts, Love, and Reflection is that platform that you can be assured that your thoughts and feelings will be respected and heard without challenge. It is time for us to come together and make sure that we're not left behind. This is your host, James T. Deshay, looking forward to have you call in to the show at 657-383-0309. 7 days a week, we want to be heard loud and clear.
USI never had it so good. 101.1 radio, the best R&B and hip hop music. The Quiet Storm every Friday and Saturday. Talk radio with the best host in the business. Sports talk radio every weekend night with Princess Cooper. Never had it so good radio now on 101.1. And it's 24-7, the world's best radio station.
In this day and time, stereotypes are the false descriptions for all of humanity. James T. Deshay is the author of two great poetry books that attempt to describe life from a male perspective. It has been a common belief that men are unable to put into words their deepest feelings and spend most of their time focused on the surface of what life means. Thoughts, Love, and Reflections, and Passion, Desire, and Contemplation take you on a journey that has very few travelers. Mr. Deshaies has opened his heart and spirit up in ways that few have ever experienced. The depth of his poetry will have you reading his books and poems over and over again. You will find yourself using his passages to describe your own feelings to your family and friends. It is now time to put aside your thoughts and feelings related to the depth of men's thoughts and delve deeply into the words of James T. Deshaies. Once again, he will put an end to your thoughts that men can't translate their heartfelt spirit into words. Both of these books will allow you to find comfort in the reality of the heart of men. You will spend hours trying to embrace the way men want to love and display their passion to the women they love. Don't be fooled by those books that create love through words of lust, vulgarity, and unhealthy displays of sexual activities. You will discover the types of words that will allow you to rejoice in the future of what love truly means to men. Your book clubs and families will be able to discuss these words without fear. No one will have to leave the room. Both of these books can be purchased at jamestdeshaies2.com and lulu.com. Feel free to reach out to the author at tlreflectionsjtd@gmail.com.
Are you prepared to shake away your fear of being rich and successful? You must discover ways to accumulate wealth without adding more work to your day. The Wealth Dad system adds more value to your hours by creating an opportunity to multiply your efforts. Visit WealthDadSystem.com. If you want more information, call 407-459-4827. This is an opportunity to change your quality of life and increase your monthly cash flow. Higgins, how are you doing this evening?
Hey, Mr. Deshaies, how you doing?
All right, I had myself on mute. I had everybody else open. I tell you what, boy, sometimes this technology will trip you up. So welcome, Mr. Higgins.
Thank you for having me.
Now, give us some idea of exactly what it is that you're talking about when you talk about popular culture.
Well, popular culture was, you know, was the shortened as the term sober care, pop culture. And pop culture is consumes of basically primarily everything that we as Americans are involved with, whether it comes from reading Vogue magazine to GQ, or whether it comes from buying Mercedes-Benz or going to the football games and the sporting events, or, you know, being involved in, you know, going to the movies and things of that nature. So all of that's considered popular culture. And like I sent you the definition.
I just wanted to ask you, what is it that moves our moral compass? You and I both know there was a time when television would not allow profanity, when television wouldn't allow nudity. And what is it that continuously moves our moral compass in a direction that the majority of people normally continue to fight, but the movement happens anyway?
Well, unfortunately, you know, it's easy to appeal to the lower nature. Greed, jealousy, envy, lust, anger. So when you leave that as the undertone of society, you have this facade of, you know, life, liberty, and justice. But, you know, surreptitiously, the undertone is, you know, conquest, dominate. You know, these are the undertones of American society. Although, you know, when they talk about life, liberty, and justice, you know, many of these things come at the expense of other people. You know, unfortunately, you know, as all of us tune in on these cell phones, to make these cell phones, some little children in Africa had to die and starve, and families had to work hard in the mines to mine coltan, because coltan is inside of all the cell phones. That's a mineral inside the cell phones that all the cell phones use. So as we, you know, as we flock to these stores to go get the new iPhone and new Android phones and these phones, we're inflicting oppression on people in another part of the world. So we don't, and all this is fueled by popular culture, by, you know, by the demand to want to belong. See, what happens is they take innate emotions that we all have, and they just play on those. You know what I mean? And you know, like the biblical scriptures say, our people suffer from lack of knowledge. So the fact that we are unaware that the very thing that, you know, that we embrace is the very thing that's looked upon by another group of people as being, you know, as almost being childlike and immature. So we got to understand that, and part of that is because the definition of popular culture is culture based on the taste of ordinary people rather than an educated elite. The assimilation of elements of popular culture into the fine arts. Now, the fine arts, you know, as you know, if you were reading, it would be Shakespeare. Listening, it would be Beethoven and Mozart and things of that nature. You know, those are what they call the fine arts. So what happens is that the upper classes, the real rich people, they don't even entertain popular culture. And that's why they go to Broadway plays. They don't go to the movies. They don't watch television. So these are the things we have to understand about the elite. You know, the elite don't know who Britney Spears is or Miley Cyrus or Steve Harvey. They have no concern. These celebrities that we idolize, and as the biblical scriptures also tell us, not to idol worship, they're mere developers. Conduits of to promote products. So after their stage life, what do? They promote products. They promote products in their stage lives. So this is the reason for why most of these people are celebrities. You know, if you understand Hollywood, the stars are created to sell films. You know, so they create the stars so that the stars can sell films. So, you know, because if they create these stars, they ensure that the movie will get sold. So that's why you have it. And this goes back to James Cagney and Audrey Hepburn in those days. You know, this is nothing new. So, you know, when we start understanding those things about popular culture, and there's a book that gives people some enlightenment on, and it's by Neil Gabler. And it's called Empire of Their Own, How the Jews Invented Hollywood. And part of the reason for the invention of Hollywood was a beef between the Edison Trust and the Jewish film houses that actually showed the films. What happens is Thomas Edison at one time controlled the film industry. And, you know, the films were shown in the Jewish movie houses. And as, you know, as technology things got more savvy, you know, and people, you know, greed and people wanted the biggest slice of the pie, they, you know, these separate entities of the Jewish movie houses, they lost a lawsuit against Thomas Edison. They moved to California so they could, you know, so they could, which was California was an undeveloped part of the country at the time, so they could basically primarily work without the intervention of people from the, you know, from the New York area, from the, you know, from the big bankers and things of that nature. So this is how Hollywood was created, and it wasn't created in terms about as a tool for our fantasies. It was created to, you know, to influence our behavior. When they had the silent films, they would make the final silent films. So they would influence the immigrants that came over here in the 1800s in terms of how they were supposed to behave and what were the higher races or ethnic groups and what were the lower ethnic groups. So this is some of the foundations of popular culture that we're unaware of, And this is why we're unaware of its nature or its effectiveness.
Why is it, though, that some things seem to move forward and proceed into areas that are once were considered amoral, and then you have other things that seem to stay in the same place? And what I mean by that is here we have the gay culture, and the gay agenda continues to move forward to the point where it has become legal for a man to marry a man and a woman to marry a woman, but yet we have denounced and continue to denounce things like prostitution, and they don't seem to evolve to the point where they become commonplace. So why is it some things move toward a immoral point of view and some things remain the same?
Because it all falls involved with class structure. And what happens is that if you go back to the Victorian era, in the Victorian era, they almost had to shame. A man named William Thomas Snead, he did an expose on child prostitution. And it was the upper class people that were frequent these brothels with children or minors. And he did this expose, which actually uncovered this, and it actually forced the hand to move the consent age from 13 to 16. And in this stage in the era where we had in society, I think that the consent age is still about 16 years old. Now, the Victorian era is from the 1800s in England. You know, and it's one of those eras that's glorified as being the pinnacle of society. But if people take a closer look at things, they will notice that, you know what I'm saying, about this massive child prostitution that they had at this time. And this is also one of the dualities of society, how it presents itself as this morally sound component, and you know what I'm saying? But then it allows these degrading acts to go on. And you're correct in terms about with prostitution and, you know, with homosexuality. But see, when you haven't seen with homosexuality, you have to understand that was the shrewd posturing by and lobbying by groups of people who felt that homosexuality suit their interests. And what you see with homosexuality was what black people have not done. Because what happens is these people have gone to Washington. They've lobbied to position themselves in the schools, in everything that's going on. And what we see now is the fruits of their labor. You know, the church condones homosexuality. And how did it have that come for faith-based initiative? Faith-based initiative is when the government gave the churches money, you know what I'm saying, in terms about initiating into a cohesiveness between government and church. Because there was always a separation of church and state. But what happens is when you take money from the government, you cannot discriminate. So that's why you have private clubs. Private clubs don't take government money, so it allows them to discriminate. So when the churches took the money, they no longer could discriminate against homosexuality. All right, so this opened the doors to okay in the churches where it was adamantly denied. So what happens is we have to see that where money and these things, you know, relax our moral compass and things make things okay. And what happens is we have to start looking at our leaders and our people, our local politicians. If we want to see what happens is everybody wants to say Trump, 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 or the president, the president, the president. Your biggest application of pressure on the president is through your local politicians by being actively involved in those elections. We're not actively involved in those elections, so this is why we don't have a strong enough voice when it comes to what the president does. because if we, you know, it's like it's protocol. Anything, any type of institution has protocol, and you can't jump protocol. So, and it ain't worked. Anybody worked, if it's worked in an institution, any type of institution, you know, you can't jump protocol. It's a chain of command. And the executive, legislative, and judicial branches of government is a chain of command. And in this chain of command, you have to go to your local city council. You have to put the pressure on your local city councilman. So we wouldn't affect Washington. You affect Washington by at home. You don't affect Washington by going to, you know, by worrying about the presidential election. And many of our concerns about many of the bills that's on hand in Washington, we're only concerned about it when it, you know, when we feel it hits home. But we have no intimate knowledge of the bills. We don't understand that many of these bills are prepared by lobbyists and these senators and these congressmen, they take these bills, have them read them, and they co-sign them because why? They got the invitation to special interests. You know, the many of these special interests is afforded them. So we have to understand that, and us as, in our community, we don't understand these things. And as Stevie Wonder once stated in one of his songs, when you believe in things that you don't understand, then you suffer. Superstition is not the way. You know, and that's what we become in our community. We become superstitious. That's the problem with popular culture. Popular culture becomes popular culture, which is a trend or a fad, becomes our culture and our community. And this is destructive because fads, trends, should not become a staple of who we are, of our being. If you look at all other ethnic groups, the fads come through and they go, but they stay grounded in their ethnic. You know, the Scottish, they wear their kilts. You know, the other ethnic groups, they wear their garments. Whatever it may be, when it comes down, when it's time to represent their ethnicity, they do. We're the only people where these fads and these things become a part of ourselves, and they become detrimental to our community, and then we sit there and lost in a conundrum. Why is this happening? Why is this happening to our children? Why is this going on? Why is this that and other? Why is all these things going on? Because you haven't applied yourself to understand what you're living in, and you know, and we've through our action and our deeds that we've shown our children that the only most important thing is money. And they've lost any sense of value. And the only value that they have in sense of terms of themselves is this money makes them valuable. So this is what we have to understand as the elders. We've dropped the ball. We have to, you know what I'm saying, come in. And now we can't even, we have to come in and try to understand them instead of try to dictate to them. Because when we see our children taking pictures in front of cars and pictures holding bottles of liquor, these are things so they can validate themselves as giving them status, important status. So we have to realize that our children feel insecure. And it's unfortunate that, you know, our so-called leaders of psychology and sociology and civic duty and community activists, they don't address these issues. And they leave them as if they don't exist. And it's unfortunate the mass is unaware of how extremely detrimental diseases are to our community.
It's just amazing to me that we allow our girls, who at some told that it is inappropriate for them to use the B word, but yet they are willing to support artists who malign them without any trouble whatsoever. So how is it that popular culture changes the viewpoint or status of our women with such ease?
Well, it does it with all of us through redundancy. Redundancy. To say, I'm going to give you an example. Many of us have heard a record on the radio we didn't like. After hearing it redundantly, we end up liking it. So what happens is through redundancy, just how to do the same thing with the reality TV. And this didn't just start. You can go back to Living Color. You can go back to that segment when they had the little segment with the two guys and he was going doing the hated thing. You know what I mean? You got to understand how these are impressions on young children. You know what I mean? And we, you know, And one thing I would like to read so we could better understand it. This is I want to read an excerpt from a book from E. Franklin Frazier called Negro Youth at the Crossways, Their Personality, Development in the Middle States. And this book was written in the 1940s. And it's a sociology book. And it is direct interviews of the children in the middle of the country and how they look at, you know, their selves in terms of the greater population. So this is the 1940s. So if we look back to the 1940s, we could hear what you say. You could say what they say that. This is a summary of the chapter on Negro Youth at the Crossway, Social Movements and Ideologies. From the data which we have been able to gather on these youth, it seems clear that social movement, in the strict meaning of the term, exercise practically no influence on their personality of Negro youth. This is even true of the few established organizations or programs for the improvement of the status of the Negro. But when a more particularized movement like picketing for jobs is inaugurated, it arouses among a minority of the latent militancy and resentment of the Negro youth toward discrimination. On the other hand, there are certain ideas current in Negro communities and border cities which seemingly influence conception which Negro youth have of themselves as well as their attitudes towards whites. There is the general belief that Negroes do not stick together. This idea certainly makes individuals feel that Negroes are inferior to whites or lack certain qualities of character to which whites possess. Although this belief has a vague reference, it often turns out to mean that Negroes do not support the business enterprises of the upper class. It is from the upper class that there has emanated the idea that the Negro could solve his economic problems by building a segregated community. The upper class sees to it that the idea of a segregated economy is tied up with the Negro's growing racial consciousness. This growing racial consciousness has fostered certain ideas concerning the Negro's physical character. The ideal picture of the Negro as presented in newspapers and magazines is not that of a black man or woman, but of a brown man or woman with modified Negro features. To the darker members of the lower classes, it provides an idea which influences wishes concerning themselves, their marriages, their marriage partners, and their children. To the middle class, the majority of whom are brown, it provides a means of racial identification. Even the upper classes, with a large proportion of members of fair complexion, accepts it with a variation towards lighter shades. Certain personalities in the Negro world exercise possibly a far greater influence upon the Negro youth than the above ideals involving merely physical characteristics. Negro youth of the lower and middle class especially are inspired with hope by Negroes who have surmounted handicaps of race and poverty and achieved some distinction in white as well as the Negro world. Negro youth in these two classes tend to identify themselves with these outstanding personalities and thereby develop confidence in their own possibilities. A person like Joe Lewis enables youth of all classes to enjoy vicariously his victories over whites. Such satisfaction, though experienced indirectly, tend to support the ego of Negro youth who on every hand encounter so much disparagement. Now, what happens is that segment I just read, that explains how, it sums up in terms about how different classes of Negroes view themselves in terms of society. Mm-hmm. And this is something we have to understand in terms about how, and this is the 1940s, and we went back to Joe Lewis. So we have to understand we've been thoroughly inundated with so many images and so much distraction in our community that our kids, our children, this has happened before us. This happened to us as well. But it's even more, we're being bombarded with it at an alarming rate now that our kids don't know are confused of what who they are, because they don't have a core foundation of what it is to be them. And this is why the fads and the trends come and affect our communities to the point where we have people living their lives and was it cartoon characters. We have people living their lives almost as, entire lives as sports stars or whatever they may be, living vicariously through other images that they wish they were. And if we understand that, when you have a duality of personality, when you have the, split personality, like a lot of these artists do, like they say, I'm this way, then I'm that way. That's the foundation for psychosis. So we don't understand, much of what we're involved with, and it's to our fault as the elders. We have to get involved. We have to get educated. So we have to know how to communicate and know how these things are affecting our children, affecting us, affecting our sexual behaviors, our wants, our needs, our desires, because we're all motivated by dreams. If you go back to the biblical scriptures, two profound stories in the biblical scriptures are Daniel and Joseph. Both were in dungeons. Both were freed through their dreams. They believed the dreams gave them the foundation, and eventually they came out of those dungeons. So we got to understand that, dreams are powerful. And what happens is that those are two separate stories in the Bible, not connected with each other. And all they said is the foundation of dreams. And so we have to understand something that, when society gives us what we want, and you have to, and to give a clear understanding of what we're saying, let's just look at it like this. You take somebody in the Amazon jungle. He's not dreaming of an iPod. He's not dreaming of a new Mercedes Benz. He might be dreaming of a big knife. You know what I mean? He might be dreaming of the dam up or some water. He might be dreaming of storing up some berries or stuff like that. But his ambitions are not driven towards his business is driven towards survival in the Amazon. Well, our ambitions are driven towards surviving in this society. And unfortunately, in this society, we're articles of consumption. We consume. Economic terms, the American population are called consumers. They're not called American citizens. They're called consumers. And this consumerism is what, and we're driven to participate in this consumerism. Competition breeds capitalism. Because as long as we're competition with each other, capitalism thrives. So as long as we both all try to outdo each other, try to buy a big house, bigger car, brand new TV, brand new sneakers, this, whatever, all this helps drive capitalism, helps drive corporations. So we don't understand our position in these things. And when they say stop spending the money, that's what they really mean, because it really, really effective. But we don't, because they know they've dug into our social being, and we want to be accepted. And if you look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs in terms about what people need in terms about as human beings, social acceptance is high up in the pyramid. It's a pyramid called Maslow's hierarchy of needs. As a psychologist from back in the day. So we got to understand these things, and we'd be better apply our desires in terms about edifying our communities if we truly understood what was creating the detriment and decadence and the nefarious behavior that we see in our communities, but we're unaware. So we walk around lost and bewildered and confused and looking at our children like, what's wrong with them? You know what I mean? And children look like, what's wrong with you? You know what I mean? And so we have to actively do, this has to be something we have to do every day. This can't be something, that just because, we're upset. We have to be precautious. We have to be preemptive, not reactive. In our strategy.
Well, I just wonder sometimes when our women are our most valued treasure and they raise our children, and we want our children to grow up with a frame of mind that shows them how important they are, but if we're tearing down their mothers, how can we're tearing down their mothers, can they believe that they have value?
Well, see, this is the thing. You know, what happens is that we have to realize what created this. And what happens is that we have to understand, you have to understand Occidental society. First of all, when we hear these things in the back of a battle of the sexes, why is there a thing called battle of the sexes? You know, when we have this, you know, Mars and Venus, men versus women, this competitive thing that they keep putting in between us. This is not something that, in terms about in African culture and people of melanated skin culture, this is not something we actually participate. And see, what happens is Malcolm X said you could rate the quality of people by the women. You know what I mean? And we got to understand that us imitating another group of people, we have to understand that European society, and I'm not saying anything to disrespect these people. This is just them and this is us. And we have to understand that in Europe and England, they used to swap their wives. They used to actually take their wives to the swap meet. They are tired of they took her to the swap meet. They actually took her to, and this is, same name of this brother with this book. I'll give you the name of the book. One moment. And so when we understand that, you know, they actually swap their wives at the swap meet, when we understand that our whole value system is David McRitchie, the Ain't and Martin Britons, and he has a 2-book series, and in his book, Ain't and Martin Britons, he talks about how they swap their wives. So what we have to understand is that, you know, how we behave and what we participate in is backwards. So, you know, and one of the things, when they relaxed marriage in the 70s, when they relaxed marriage and feminism, there's a woman named wrote a book called Christina Hoff Sumners. It's called Who Stole Feminism and How Women Betrayed Women. So what happens is we got to understand that, much of what we see going on with our sisters is partly because we've all been manipulated to be against each other. So we're in competition with each other when we should not be. And we should be helping each other. We need more understanding. You know, just like when you look at the children with the clothes, and you look at the children with the clothes, and they're wearing these wild, outlandish clothes, and these clothes, you know what I'm saying, these clothes where, you know, in terms of close to their figure and stuff like that, well, the parents didn't make them. So how are the kids wearing them? You know what I mean? So what happens is okay, here we go. Okay. Now, in this book, H.M. Martin Britton's Marital Rights, we're talking about, these are some of the things that, in terms about what they were doing in England. And on page 287, and it's in volume 2, same author, David McRitchie, it says that perhaps the marriage tie was never looser than among those tribes who had one name for women and male who left their wives with a halter round their necks to Smithfield, where they sold them like cattle. The memory of this period is still preserved in everyday English by the twofold meaning of the word jade, and this is that this nomenclature also survives among the Tory classes. It's illustrated by two of Mr. Groom's gypsies and gypsies' tents, page 75, pages 175 and 180. The place that is most celebrated as the wife market, Smithfield, is one of those districts which were the special abode of tinkers, also called prigs, in the 16th century and before and after. It is likely among such people that this custom is still kept up, for it is not quite obsolete. Not that the halter or a particular locality seems not necessary, but the custom of selling wives is still occasionally recorded in our newspapers, and it is not likely that there are many other cases which are not so recorded. The newspapers do not perhaps specify that wife buyers and wife sellers are gypsies, but it is probably they are so. The practice of wife beating is one that Ursula in the Romany Rye holds up as a gypsy custom, and she maintains that a man has, according to ideas of her people, a perfect right to maltreat his wife, and that is her duty to submit humbly to such maltreatment, from which one may infer that in those districts where wife beating is a common practice and recognized as a marital right, the natives are in a great measure of gypsy blood, and it is not unlikely that the men who buy and sell their wives are also the same lineage. It is often by chance that newspapers record the gypsy blood of the perpetrators of actions of this kind. So we got to understand, like, so now we got a better understanding of, you know, our English marriage interpretation, you know, and where it stems from. And when you understand where certain things stem from, you'll be able to understand why these things seem so weird and, you know, and what we see amongst us, you know. Amongst what we see amongst, you know, the brothers and sisters is, you know, especially in our community, is animosity and anger. And much of this stems from, we got to understand, stems from when there were, a lot of women in our community have been molested as children. And these things, you know, they come to the root of anger and confusion in our community. So we have to understand these things. And a lot of people in our community are hurt, you know. The Bible tells us, don't provoke our children to anger. Don't provoke them to wrath. So we got to understand that we got to, you know, we got to do some healing. We got some work to do, all of us. We got to roll our sleeves up and, you know what I'm saying, and do it. And every little bit counts. Every little bit helps. You know what I mean? So it's just that's what it's about. You know what I mean? And as long as we continue to have shows like what you're doing, Mr. Deshay, and, you know, your whole march and what it stands for is exactly what needs to be done. And I'm just thankful that, you know, someone is yourself as a platform that's given a voice so we can address these issues, because without addressing them, you know, they're going to continue to mess in, and, you know, meaning swell, and they're going to continue to grow. And, you know, what we're seeing now, you know, and it's been said by many people that we're watching the extinction of black people. You know what I mean? 40 years ago, Nellie Fuller and a woman named Dr. Frances Cress Wilson, she said that they said that black men will one day wear dresses. And now as we see black men and women dresses. So we have to understand that much of what we see has already been forecasted in terms about precipitation with the behavior. Certain things correlate to the next step, to the next step. It's almost like watching someone use drugs and destroy themselves. So as a group of people, we're watching ourselves destroy ourselves because we don't understand group psychology. We individualize ourselves because we live in individual society. There's two basic societies in the world, collective and individual. This is why when you look at the Filipinos, the Arabs, the Africans, the people from the Caribbean, and things that they come from a collective society. Collective societies where they, you know, they feel that their ancestry has a direct impact on their daily behavior. And Occidental society, Western society, it's a individualistic society where it's me, myself, and I. And whereas, you know, basically it's just that. It's me, myself, and I can care less about too much about my family members. And this is why in black community we live in this oxymoron, because we're family-oriented. We're family-oriented people. But we live in society that, you know what I'm saying, that goes at the nucleus of family and to destroy it. And this is why we – so basically, you know, why we feel uncomfortable in this culture is because we're wearing shoes that don't fit. And whoever you wear shoes that don't fit, whether they're too big or too small, you know what I'm saying, they're going to hurt your feet. So this is what's going on
all right,
in the black community.
Let's take a short break and we'll come back and involve our audience.
No problem.
You know I love music. And every time I hear something hot, it makes me want to move. It makes me want to have fun. But it's something about this joint right here. This joint right here, it makes me want to...
Just a Thought by James T. Deshaies. There is never a perfect time to step out on faith. It will always require risking the safety of where you are at the moment. But one will never be completely happy when their dreams are not being reached. The higher the dreams, the greater the risk. When the right opportunity makes itself available, you have to choose to close your ears to naysayers and move forward beyond your fears. Please visit WealthDadSystems.com. That's WealthDadSystems.com. WealthDadSystems.com. I look forward to talking to you soon. Remember, there are a lot of people waiting for their ship to come in. It might require us to swim out to meet it.
Cheryl, how do we go about making sure that the pop culture doesn't erode our moral values to the point where we find ourselves just becoming despicable individuals?
Good evening, and how is everyone doing this evening?
Good evening.
You know, with that, I think that a lot of it, if we come together, when you say we come together, we can make a change and a difference in a lot of areas. But it starts within the home and extending outside the home. Because although we promote certain things, you know, different values in the home, we still have the influence outside of the home. So say that we have to start within the home and we have to come together outside the home, because anything that we want to do, we are more powerful enough to do it. But it's getting the majority on board. And today we are so led by money that, you know, most people are willing to do just about any and everything to make the money. So we have to go back to the morals and the values and what is, you know, value, and not putting more emphasis on the dollar. You know, we can find other ways to be able to make money without exposing ourselves. So, you know, I just think that it starts within the home and extends outside in us coming together.
And let me just say this, Mr. Higgins, and I'd like you to answer this question for me. And I, you know, it's out of time. You know, a lot of who we are and the things that we accomplish, a lot of young people and want to give the credit to this organization that says that they've sold their souls to the devil. And so if they believe that every accomplished individual somehow has sold his soul to the devil, how can they believe that they can accomplish anything with being committed to believing in themselves and believing in the rules, you know, the Creator's rules? And you have to forgive me. I know you know that organization that they're always talking about that Jay-Z belonged to and Beyonce belonged to. You know, I mean, people talk about that like it's so real. And I'm like, how can they believe in God and believe that exists at the same time, too?
Well, it's just like this, Mister. I'm glad you brought that subject up. About that, you know, about these All right, that organization, right? Let's talk about that organization. Right? Let's talk about the founders or the participants of it. We have people like Benjamin Franklin, George Washington, you know, Francis Bacon, Sir Isaac Newton,
Galileo, Theodorus Erasmus, Jean Jacques Rousseau. Those are the names of the people of that organization. Those are some of the founders of the thought of society that we live into today. So when you put such mediocre people in the ranks of those names, it's to those who are aware of the depth of that organization, it's almost as laughable. And the fact that our children are, you know, believe in this is because many of these so-called organizations, they have rituals that intertwine. They all have similarities. So, and, you know, in terms of selling your soul, let's just pick on that aspect. You can do that at your job. You know, when you're at work and you're working for an organization and it's all about numbers and it's not about the service that you give people, and you can do that in many different fields, institutions, whether it's medical, social service, you know, criminal justice, you know, so soul selling goes on that level when, you know, you watch injustice happen and you just participate in it, you turn a blind eye to it. So that's so, and that's what we're seeing with these entertainers. When we talk about they're selling their souls, they know they're poisoning our children. But they turn a blind eye to it. And one of the ways of tempting them to behave in this manner is by testing their moral fortitude through sexual decadence. So, and we live in a society that, you know, that bases everything through sex. Like, if you look at the definition of testosterone. If you look at testosterone, they always give you a sexual definition and not give you the definition. The initial definition is just sexual drive and impulse and things of that nature. But it doesn't give you the totality, you know, what it drives. And testosterone is the institution of power in a man. So we live in, you know, when you talk about this group of people, you talk about Queen Elizabeth, you know what I mean? You're talking about the people of this stature. Talk about John Dee's, this thing called the Invisible College. Before they had this guy called Adam Weishaupt, who was just a courier. You know what I mean? So, you know, you're talking about such people with just great stature in history and society. And to mere entertainers who are just mere vessels of information. You gotta understand something about entertainment. Entertainment, when you take it back to the Roman days, take it back to Rome, it was a propaganda tool, it was a tool of propaganda to propagate to the masses. An example of this is when they wanted to jade the public against Julius Caesar. The Senate didn't want Julius Caesar at one time was the most powerful man in the world because he controlled the biggest army. And the Senate, you know, was jealous of his power. So before they actually can get Brutus to kill him, you know, they went on a smear campaign and they did these plays about him cheating with killing Cleopatra. You know what I mean? Because remember, he went to Egypt and got a wife, and he had a wife already. So they did these plays, right, you know, as a smear campaign. You know what I mean? So, boom, so what happens is, so when he came back to Rome, The environment was already set where he wasn't aware that they already made you look bad already. So it was easy to persuade people to go against him. You know what I mean? So we got to understand these propaganda tools in terms about how these, see, entertainment is the propaganda to get us into something. And, you know, you got to understand these guys, you know, these guys, they're being told what to do, the same way Trump is being told what to do. You know what I mean? So, you know, these guys, you know, and they're no longer viable once they're not, once they go independent. Once they're not no longer on these labels, they're no longer viable. Look at them. They have tax problems. They have all these things. And I don't like to badmouth them in terms about, because they're really of no importance to me in my life. They never have been. And that's the problem in our black community, that we are more aware of our entertainers than our local politicians or the politics or the political system. So this is what's part of the criminality in our community, because how is it that, you know, and even on adults, you know, the lives and life and times of most of these entertainers are more on their lips than, you know, what's going on, you know, in terms of housing and in terms of education, in terms of, you know, things of this nature in the community. So we're almost childlike in society, and we want some people to respect us, and we go out and march and look like fools. You know what I'm saying? No, you get involved. You know what I'm saying? You just like whine, you know, in terms of, we just like, we're whining because, no, all of a sudden you want to whine. No, get involved. And then on Friday, you're back in the club drinking and partying again. So, you know, and we got to understand, we live in a society right now, you know, I work in workforce development for 4 years, and it's more kids who haven't been to church than have been to church. So we got to understand what we're dealing with, what's happened to our children. We've been going through a metamorphosis, you know what I'm saying? And it's all because of the lax and relaxation on our values. And our values have been relaxed through following these so-called entertainers who emulate lifestyles that we wish we could have. You know what I mean? And see, we go for validation outside ourselves. All that we look for our validation outside ourselves. And these people, and they're just instruments of hope. Hope that we could hit the lottery and maybe one day live in this manner or fashion. But we have no awareness of what they have to do, because if you look at their lives, look at simply an entertainer. Majority of them do not have any tangible assets. You don't see them opening up any tangible businesses that you can frequent. They're actually taking dollars, cash dollars. You always hear about them getting deals and potentials of deals. You know what I mean? You always hear about them, you know, using drugs, illicit drugs, drugs, drugs. Now, all of us have been poor, and we got to live our lives and have some money. Now you're going to spend the rest of it just getting high? The only behavior of people that just get high are people who degraded themselves. And many people have to degrade themselves for stardom. And that's the whole thing about it. So that's what they connect these rituals, make this little club called, you know, the Illuminati, and to these meager people who are really of no importance, who are just a vapor on the lips of history. You know what I mean? Who really, you know what I'm saying? Who really going to be told these instruments of how they manipulate us back into prostitution, how they manipulate us into drug usage, how they manipulate us back into the heroin epidemic. You know, we got our children 19, 20, 18 years old and using these drugs from what? What did you see? You had too much. They don't even know what mayonnaise sandwiches is. Many of these kids that's 25 years old don't know what mayonnaise sandwiches is. You have to be under the parameters of somebody who was under extreme neglect at this time, in this day and age, for children to know what sugar water mayonnaise sandwiches is. So we got to understand that, you know what I'm saying, that our kids didn't, you know, that they're socially mature, all different ways they're inept, and they're not able to function with mainstream society. And part of it is the video games, is the music. And the video games is one of the most detrimental aspects of it, because they get to pretend for 8-9 hours a day. You know what I mean? So we got to understand how, you know, and this culture and these rappers and these entertainers, they implemented this culture. They helped usher it in. You know, many people applaud Ice Cube, but he's the one that that popularized strip clubs. It took one movie to popularize strip clubs in our community. You know, and think about it, Mr. Shea. You know, you're an old gentleman like I am. Up until to the mid-90s, you didn't see African-American women participate into the capacity in the sex industry as you do now. You know what I mean? This was something that, you know, it was a rare, but he's not saying that they weren't. But they're in the sex industry is now. Truncated the more how black men look at each other, how we look at our women. You know what I'm saying? And why and poverty initiates the need for this stuff. You know what I mean? And the Communist Manifesto by Karl Marx and and Charles Ingalls, he said in 1868, in 1860-something, that they were going to create a community of women, all for the bourgeoisie to come take the proletariat, who's the poor, to be able for them to come pick and choose from our women. So when they put a monetary value on relationships, that's the root of all, in terms about, you know what I'm saying, cohesive family units. You know what I mean? That monetary value on relationships.
All right. Let me ask 9786. Do you have, would you like to make a statement or ask a question regarding where are we going as a culture or as a society where our moral values seem to be eroding? 9786, are you there? It just seems to me, Mr. Higgins, like we're really fighting to keep ourselves from going off the cliff. You know, that there's a segment of our country that is bought into the rap music, and this thought that there's nothing more important about life than obtaining wealth.
Right.
Not what you can do with that wealth to better society. You know, I know that there's nothing, you know, you need money. You need money so that you can be a blessing to others, so you can create an environment that life can be lived in a better fashion. You know, I sit and wonder sometimes about if I had enough money to buy an apartment complex and I could rule over that apartment complex in a way that would allow young kids to have a safe playground and free of any intrusion of drugs so that they could live their lives in a way that they could prosper.
Right.
And so money could be used to enhance the living environment for young people and their parents so that they could really live out the true abilities. But we have, when they're inundated with all the evils of our society being intertwined with money, they associate money with the lustful passions to take advantage of women.
Oh, and without a doubt, see what happens in that altruistic nature that's inside you is something that many of us that comes from these classes will want. And at the fact that when you look at some, I'm going to give you an example. When you look at someone like Bill Cosby, when you look at someone, you know, the stature of Quincy Jones, when you look at the stature of these people and see that they haven't created institutions that could subsidize that, you have to question their intentions. You have to question, what are you about? You know what I mean? Where is the act of, you know, involvement to create institutions and to make sure that children aren't wayward? You know what I mean? We have to really look at that. You know what I'm saying? You know, when we look at these things, we see that, you know what I'm saying, these people don't actively involve themselves in doing things that by nature some of us would just do just because. You know what I mean? Because we have the excess. So we have to understand that much of this is not happening is because this is part of what you call the selling of the soul, or the ignoring of avenues or ways to try to help the community. You know what I mean? And it started way before the popular culture entertainers of today. You know what I mean? So, you know, when you see that these people aren't actively, you know what I'm saying, in terms of working towards, you know what I'm saying, you know, creating a new generation of even entertainers, the thespians, artists, you know what I'm saying, and Watts, he has a writer's workshop, you know what I mean, with something that, you know what I'm saying, that they had in the early 70s in terms about that, you know, help produce more art, more actors and actresses and musicians and things like that. So, you know what I mean? You know, and when we don't have these type things, these donations in the community, you know what I'm saying, try to help people, children be creative and be artistic, this is where you can see where the shortcomings. You know what I'm saying? I'm gonna give you an example. When I say about these artists and when and how, you know, their portfolios don't match with what they say about the money they have, you can look at Larry Holmes. Larry Holmes, if you look at the life of Larry Holmes, the boxer, Larry Holmes in Pennsylvania, at one point in time, he owned the hometown, you know, hotels, restaurants, all different sorts of businesses in his town. You know what I mean? So what happens is that this is a portfolio. This is a portfolio showing where, you know, this is where I have an economic base. This is like my investments are. When we look at many of these entertainers, you don't see portfolios like that. Like I said, you see contracts and endorsement deals and da 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 this da da that. You know what I mean? And money, once they're gone, the money's gone and they vanish. You know what I mean? It's obscurity. So, for us to aspire to be entertainers is basically to be no more than a tailor. When we look at Gucci and we look at Christian Dior and these Louis Vuitton and these fashion powerhouses, but if you know the history of Brooks Brothers and everything, they started out as tailors. They make clothes for the rich. So the rich is never, you're never gonna get richer than the rich. So we look up to all these people, these little, you know, Vera Wang, Kate Spade, or whatever, you know, and Balmain and whoever you want to call them, and really they cater to the rich. So really they the rich flunkies. So, you know, look what we aspire to be. We aspire to be the low man on the totem pole. So we don't have aspirations for being the top. We aspire to be the bottom. You want to be the top, then you will control iron ore. You will control chocolate. You will control rice. You will control energy. That's the top. You call oil, gas, you know what I'm saying, things like that. Rubber, sugar, natural resources. And that's why they went all around the world, and that's what the global economy is about, corporations jacking all that from these countries. Colonialism, however you want to call it, global economy. Hey, man, listen, man. People got to get aware, you know, because it's
all
like,
right,
you know.
We're going to take our final break, and we'll come back and get everybody's final word.
Okay.
Your children, and don't let them fall by the side of the road, and teach them to love one another, that heaven might find a place in their hearts. 'Cause Jesus is love. He won't let you down, and I know He loves forever. We've got to walk on through temptation, 'cause His love and His wisdom will be our helping hand. I know the truth and His word will be our salvation. Lift up our hearts to be thankful and glad that Jesus is love. He won't let you die.
Just a Thought by James T.D. Shea. The experience of your touch is no pleasure beyond the joy of passion. It is to life an extraordinary event that makes one completely forget the world around them. You create moments that will never be recreated. The senses of one's being are taken to a place that leaves their body unable to respond to normal stimulus. Your actions can't be duplicated or reenacted because you bring a passion that only your spirit can display. Every intimate moment holds a secret exhibit of your feelings for me. I embrace them knowing that each movement of your body produces a perfect portrait of affection. My body is like a canvas waiting to be transformed from blankness to color. Only imagine with eyes tightly closed in darkness as the backdrop. I long to re-experience it daily. This is James T. Deshay, the host of Thoughts, Love, and Reflection, brought to you by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network. This is a platform where your voice can be heard loud and clear. The show is on Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 o'clock West Coast Time, Saturday and Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 o'clock West Coast Time. Call in at 657-383-0309. Please visit my website, www.JamesTDeshay2.com. That's www.JamesTDeshay2.com. Please consider purchasing my books, Thoughts, Love, and Reflection, Passion, Desire, and Contemplation. They can be purchased at my website or at lulu.com. That's www.lulu.com. I look forward to you being a part of my audience. Call in so that your voice can be heard loud and clear without interruption.
All right, Cheryl, what is your final thought for this evening?
I really, really enjoyed the information that was given. I really enjoyed, you know, listening because this platform is such a learning experience, and it helped me to understand many things that I was not aware of, but to refresh my mind of things that I were. And it's always an eye-opening to be able to have more information delivered. That way we cannot just talk about it, but we can also, you know, put actions behind the things that that are before us. So, as always, great, great information that you deliver. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, 9786, I want to give you an opportunity to have a little bit of something to say. You've been with us the whole show. Can you give us a name and where you're calling from? 9786.
This is Uncle Bryant.
And hey!
I just wanted to get in it on it, but I just couldn't get in on it. But, I got Hassan all the way through.
All right. All right, Mr. Higgins, what is your final thoughts for this evening as we close out the show today?
I'm just thankful we had this platform this evening, discussed this topic this evening, you know, and hopefully it shed light on, you know, some of the problems that's going on in our community so we have a better understanding, and hopefully they connect with the other shows and we all start having a greater understanding of what we need to focus our efforts on in terms about creating a better environment in our communities. We have to focus our efforts on certain things, you know. A lot of times we focus our efforts on things that are not, you know, going to actually, destroy some of the negative things that's going on. So we have to focus our efforts on the root of it, then we'll be able to destroy you know, what we don't like to see in our community.
All right. I want to just let everyone know that when you call in and lend your support or listen to the show, it gives us an opportunity to share information so that we can all be have an understanding of where it is we're going and what it is we need to do in order to alter the direction if need be. We will be here tomorrow at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, and we look forward to talking with you about the things that impact our lives now and in the future. It's important for us to stay on top of everything that's going on in our society to make sure that things just don't happen to us, but we have an opportunity to make a difference. Again, thank you for your continued support, and I look forward to seeing you tomorrow at 6 p.m. Eastern Time as we try to make sure that our lives are going in the right direction. Take care, everybody.
I am Democrat. I will be a Democrat beyond the existence of my physical being. I am a liberal because living in the past does not work for those I serve. I believe in liberal causes because as I better understand the world, I understand the need for change. I'll leave to Hannah Hume. Bobby Womack's on the red.